Welcome to Reality TV, the podcast where we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. I'm Jody, your source for snarky reality TV recaps from all the networks across the board. No one is off limits as I dissect even the tiniest details of our favorite train wrecks. Be sure to follow up between episodes on Twitter and Instagram at Reality TV Pod. Snark with me and fellow listeners on Facebook in the Reality TV Podcast Orchard of Snark group. And for nitty-gritty, unfiltered me, check out bonus episodes at patreon.com/realitypod. All right, let's get to the good stuff. Welcome back. Another Friday night, another eye-popping episode of Love After Lockup. This show is the gift that keeps on giving, and although I kind of wish it was on a weeknight, because Friday nights I like to have a little red wine, a little vodka tonic buzz, go with my dateline, catch up on my 60 days in, but I will forgive the powers that be at WeTV because this show is really bringing it in the same way that 90 Day Fiancé did. And just in case you missed the little leaks coming out this week and last week, there are couples from before the 90 days that are saying they are coming back for the new season of 90 Day Fiancé. Paul and Karini, I believe, and also Lair Bear and Jenny. God damn it, Larry. I miss you, my little rascal, my little pocket loris. Ooh, that kind of rhymes. Lawrence the loris. I don't know. A loris is an animal, by the way. Google it, and you shall see the cutest little Larry of a mammal. They're adorable. All right. God damn it, Larry. You made me get off track. Let's get back to Love After Lockup. Scott and his fiancée, Lizzie, are counting down the days to be together. Scott is talking on his cell phone to Lizzie while driving, which drives me crazy. This couple should never, ever be in a car together between him not using a hands-free option and her passion for drunk driving. I think the universe is saving us from them if you know how the story ends up. I won't spoil it for those of you who do not know yet. Although Scott looks like an older brother, Uncle Jesse from 90 Day Fiancé, he is a lot less charming and he doesn't clip his nails. This guy could walk into any nail salon and get a full set of acrylic nails and they wouldn't even have to put that fake nail on top of his. It's disgusting. Never trust a man with nails that have grown past his nail bed. Just that underside of growth. Oh, it has seen the likes of things that scientists can't even dream of growing in a petri dish. Now, Lizzie doesn't give a crap about any of that because, quite honestly, she probably doesn't even remember which guy she's been talking to and she's supposed to marry. Just crossing her fingers someone shows up on that release day. Now, I did some research on this lady for a Patreon episode this week, and if there is a prison pen pal site, she was on it and is all over it. Every single one of them. She is quite possessive and presumptuous too, because she's on the phone with Scott and she's telling him how she cannot wait to decorate the house. My house. If my own kids said that to me, I would be reminding them, do we remember who put the down payment on this house? No, my house. Until this point, most of the 4 minutes of screen time in both these episodes combined has been given to Scott, his son, and that 10-speed bike. But somehow, California prison not only allows inmates to have internet, phones, computers, TVs, they also let camera crews into the actual cells. Is this alarming to anyone else? A reality TV crew. Honestly, this prison allows more access in every regard than any school building in the U.S. Like, what the hell is going on? Do people in California know about this? And during Lizzie's grand tour, she shows us her Bible that she's been wetting the pages of to make it look like she reads it. And she often refers to this Bible between what I'm guessing is her live cam sessions to ask, why did this happen to me? Oh, why did I get 8 years for DUI just running over a guy's foot? Oh, she's the real victim here, isn't she? I mean, if that person weren't sitting on that park bench just minding their own business when she was driving home with a blood alcohol level of over 0.25, she wouldn't even be in this mess. Rude. I mean, God, just go sit at home. Get out of my way. Well, with all this time to pray, Lizzie has planned her fairy tale wedding with a huge dress and matching price tag, butterflies, white horses, a carriage, and a time capsule back to 1988 when all of these cliche things were actually in style. How is this couple going to pull it off anyway? Well, Scott has been a truck driver for 30 years, and although he tells her that her wants and desires are okay and he can make sure that they get by, he realizes now that it's not cheap. But he's going to pull a classic 90-day fiancé move and not tell his fiancé until she gets home. And at that point, it's going to be too late for her to find another sucker to pick her up from the clink, so she's going to be stuck. We get a fun little Real Housewives scene where Scott goes shopping with his friend Char, and Lizzie doesn't have any clothes to wear after her release. I actually believe this because based on her photos before she was incarcerated, she didn't wear any clothes back then either. Char is our voice of reason friend. She's a good friend, gives good advice, and Scott thinks that Char is just skeptical and doubtful of this because Lizzie's just too good looking for Scott. That the only reason Lizzie is with Scott as well is to scam him out of money. But that's not true, right, Scott? Well, how much have you given her, Scott? $20,000 in 2 years. Think about that. You guys, this is crazy. What could she be spending on in prison with $20,000? Okay, so let's break this down. We had $10,000 a year, okay, divided by 12 months. I had to use a calculator. That's $834 a month. I have never spent that much on myself in a month in my life. Not on clothes, hair, whatever the hell. I don't even think I spend that much on groceries for a family of four in a month. So Char asks Scott, how can you afford all this? And of course he can't, but Scott says that Char's got nothing to worry about. It's just that Lizzie has nothing in her closet. She needs it, and he's just going to charge it and pay it off later. Sounds like every young and dumb college student. And Char just cannot roll her eyes hard enough and snaps back that, well, you better keep that damn receipt. Clearly, she knows what we do, that Lizzie isn't going to get out, or Lizzie's going to be hightailing it out of California and isn't going to be sitting on the back of Scott's 10-speed anytime soon. Well, Lizzie isn't the only one checking out of a California prison. Lamar is set to be released after serving 18 years in prison for robbery. Andrea is still pretty upset about her bridal shower went. I can't blame her with that meanie Mormon AJ. And she's come to terms with her friend Stephanie being her only friend in the Mormon circle that she has that's going to be supportive of her. Stephanie's hiding her face behind her hair and Andrea's hair because either she's sewing in a new weave or taking one out. I don't know how that works. So when Stephanie finally speaks, it shocked me a little because she has this little girl voice, and all of a sudden she pushes her hair out of the way to reveal she was the woman who played Marla Hooch in A League of Their Own. And I love that movie. And now, since I know it's Marla, I fully trust this friendship. She's a hell of a ball player, but with a heart of gold. Now, Marla wants Andrea to remember that she has to listen to her heart and her savior and pray throughout that 9-hour drive alone in the desert. Is it bad that it sounds like a hell of a vacation to me right now? Think about that, 9 hours alone in a car with my favorite podcast on, maybe a few Slim Jims, if I'll be honest, because I do love a stick of sodium, little hot coffee that I can actually drink while it's still hot. Well, at the very least, Andrea is going to get this well-deserved break from being a super single mom. Fast forward to the next morning, and Andrea is assembling her kids to send her off. They're having this little prayer circle. She promises to call them every night for prayers. I thought that was sweet. And then she does this mime mirroring thing with them, like a wax on, wax off movement. And then she does some Lamaze breathing to calm down. And the kids are just squeezing each other's hands, starting to bicker during this prayer. So Andrea's big moment for the cameras is just blown with typical sibling fighting. And I actually kind of loved it because it just humanized the whole scene that these kids actually seem normal. As Andrea leaves, we get to meet one of them, Nyla, Andrea's daughter. Nyla is the new Olivia from 90 Day Fiancé, Molly's daughter. She doesn't understand why her mom has to be bringing this strange man to their home and in their lives. And I'm with Nyla. It is such a reckless move. I don't know what is with these women in their mind that they are just moving in these strange men. I'm not on board with that. During her drive through the desert, Andrea is thinking of all these lingering questions that she has about Lamar still. She knows what he's like as an inmate, but what's he going to be like on the outside? Is he going to fit in with her Mormon life? Does he drink alcohol? Is he a bad tipper? Now that one made me pause. Like, of all the questions you should have for a former gang member moving into your home who's in prison for 20 years, is he a bad tipper? I mean, it's a great question when you start dating. We've all heard this before. How they treat a server is very telling to their personality. But with Lamar, he might be a great tipper back in the 90s, but shit, it's been 18 years with inflation. He might be leaving a $3 tip thinking he's making it rain when really he's just stiffing the Buffalo Wild Wings server on all-you-can-eat wings night. Well, finally she arrives to the prison and she has to wait on the side of the road. She's a full-on mess. She's dry heaving. It's a disaster. She goes to the trunk to get a bag to throw up in, which I still don't understand, because why would you not just puke on the side of the road? What are you going to do with that bag full of puke now? You're not going to put it back in the car. And are you going to litter right outside of a federal facility? Who's a lawbreaker now? That made no sense. But you know what? Walking and talking to yourself will help. So Andrea starts walking down the dusty shoulder of the road, and then we see it. She's in house slippers. She's full on batshit Looney Tunes in her house slippers on the side of a road, repeating Clark Griswold pre-swim with Christie Brinkley. This is crazy, this is crazy, this is crazy. And then she sees a minivan come out of the facility and starts breathing heavy and wheezing like a tweenage girl about to meet, I was going to say Backstreet Boys, but that's so out of date. Whatever ugly boy band is popular now. But psych, oh, not him, not the van. And I loved it because it's like one of those moments where someone's waving and then you realize like, oh shit, that's not who I thought. And you're caught in that awkward moment. But finally, we see a real prison van. And something tells me Andrea isn't going to be staying chaste because she is orgasming in the middle of the highway. She is ooh, ooh, ooh-ing, oh, oh, oh-ing, ah-ing, and varying octaves of ecstasy. And then there he is on Lamar. I was number P8237, 18 years in prison for robbery. I loved it. So Andrea runs into the middle of the highway, traffic be damned. We shouldn't be too surprised she doesn't care about the rules of the road when she's wearing house slippers to greet the man who hasn't touched a woman in 18 years. And yet somehow she still looked better than Jonna, go figure. So Lamar is thrilled and he says, "It feels good to be with my woman on the side of the freeway." He really said that. Okay, I mean, that right there. Can we put that on like a wooden plaque in her house? "It feels good to be with my woman on the side of a freeway." All right, fingers crossed, in a non-gang kind of way, that he writes a rap about this, "Love on the Side of the Freeway," because I think it could be a really big hit. Now, it does concern me a little bit that although Lamar is 40, he says he still feels 22, 23. And I think Andrea is kind of worried about this too, because she says that she just hopes these days of his youth gang banging are over and he fits seamlessly into her world. I'm just hoping that her kids are going to be okay. Time to check in with newly released Ala and her boyfriend, James, back in Wisconsin. Ala is at her mom's house where her friend is going to come over and dye her hair. James is buying some flowers for Ala, and I think her mom was that second bouquet. Nice touch. I'm sure Ala hasn't had fresh flowers around her in years. And then we find out James's dad is a Chicago cop, and he hasn't told anyone in his family about Ala. Now, I know some Chicago cops, and my entire side of the family have been Chicagoans since they immigrated here. They are a special kind of tough-as-nails breed, so I'm a little scared for James. Quick side note, because I wrote this down that I have to tell you. I know you're all like me, because we're the same type of people who love reality stuff like this. You know what is so addictive to listen to? The police scanners of big cities like Chicago. Don't think I'm crazy, okay? Years ago, my sister and I got hooked on listening. You just go to your little app store, put like police scanner or whatever, and download it. I know it sounds crazy, but there's some crazy and funny shit that goes down. And now I'm finding it sounds kind of psycho when I'm saying it out loud. But anyway, check it out. It's so much fun, especially weeknights. There's some crazy shit that goes down and just the bantering between dispatch and police. Oh, love it. So anyway, back to Ala. She's talking about how she really was a huge disappointment for her parents. And she's telling us this in an interview. And I don't want to accuse someone of anything per se, but let's just say she looked and sounded like and had the same mannerisms as a confirmed very high Ryan on Teen Mom. Okay. She just isn't seeming like the same Ala that is talking when she's getting her hair done or talking in the car when she was with her parents when she was released. Now, her hairstylist friend comes over, and I know this woman because when I go for good Polish or Ukrainian food in Chicago, I mean, I like bleed Polish blood through and through. These are the women who look at me like I am a total schlub because I'm not walking around in 3-inch TJ Maxx heels in a midriff after church. I never feel like more of a zoo animal than being in Polish grocery stores. Like one of these things is not like the other. It's not hard to find because it's me. I'm the only one in flip-flops and jeans. So this woman is like thousands of others that I have come into contact with. Now, Ala tells her all about James. He's an IT guy, and although she got lots of letters from guys in prison, James stuck out because he could relate to her because he was going through a divorce. Okay, doesn't seem exactly like prison. I'm sure it had nothing to do with the fact that James doesn't look anything like Scott, who I'm guessing 99.9% of those letters coming in are either from Scott or guys that look like Scott. Very similar to Teresa Giudice's camp experience, Ala said all the girls in prison have husbands at home, girlfriends inside, boyfriends they write to, and tricks. And I'm so suburb, I don't totally know what she means, but I'm guessing it just means guys that these women scam. Ala also tells my Ukrainian, Polish, Russian friend that she's a born-again virgin and she's in heat, which is shocking because one look at those Ukrainian-esque window treatments were enough to make me feel severely depressed and like I need to go through there with a bundle of sage and just burn and cleanse the place. After her makeover of sorts, which was kind of strange because her hair looked exactly the same to me, Ala is back at her old apartment. That was weird, right? Her parents maintained her apartment for the last 5 years. So if you mean to tell me her parents paid rent on this place for 5 years while it was empty, I will tell you that this is probably why she had issues with drugs and enabling and entitlement. I'm hoping, crossing my fingers in a non-gang way again, that this is a situation where her parents just own the building or something. So she's going through all her old clothes and shoes, which I have to admit would be very weird coming back and seeing your closet how you left it 5 years ago. And then she's slathering on makeup that is now at least 5 years old. That is so gross to me, because aren't you supposed to replace certain things every few months because of germs? That would be a perk of prison release, just getting to splurge on all new stuff. It wouldn't even have to be a whole Ulta haul. Just let me loose in a Target or a CVS in that makeup section, and I would be doing snow angels in the aisle. Well, James finally arrives with his thoughtful bouquet and some PTSD-inducing furry handcuffs, and Ala and he are clearly wanting to get on, but there's a camera guy all up in their faces. And sadly, from those interview segments, it appears like it's a good thing people are around Ala a lot, because I don't think she's up to much good on her own. Now, this is where we need the classic Barbara Evans Teen Mom sound clip. You know what I'm talking about. I seen you with Kifa. Okay, hint, hint, wink, wink. All right, and now, without further ado, my favorite, we have DaBella DaBall, Prison Mike. Garrett is all kissy-necky on Jonna as they're driving towards her house. Nobody got a hot body but you, you know what I'm saying? Spent far too long waiting, far too long. I feel like I'm going to be a wild animal, you know? Ugh, Garrett is so unattractive to me. It's his porcupine hair paired with the gap tooth and that dialect that he must have learned at the same faux accent school of arts that Dorit from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills graduated from. And while Garrett dreams of peeling off Jonna's Spanx bodysuit, Jonna dreams of her required engagement ring. My mom always told us growing up, your engagement ring will be 1 carat solitaire stone. A 1 carat solitaire stone, you'll always want a 1 carat solitaire stone. So I want a 1 carat solitaire stone with thin band with diamonds all around it. Ugh, which of these two assholes are worse? Now, with all these demands for this engagement to happen immediately, Garrett says he feels pressure to have a good income. I'm not kidding. Go back and replay it. He can't say pressure. So what is this convicted felon planning for this lucrative career in Tampa? I'm going to get this massage therapy up and running. You know what I'm saying? So he wants to open up his own massage envy. Yeah, he would be lucky to change towels at Massage Envy. Now, felony aside, would any of you trust a guy who looks and talks like that to massage your cellulite? No. Jonna surprisingly points out the obvious kink in his plans, like we saw, but she's also concerned if he's going to flirt with women he's massaging. Oh my God. These two are such morons to think that other people find them attractive. Take the confidence down a notch. Now, once inside the house, Garrett calls the dog ugly. I mean, that's just cruel to the dog and to Jonna, because they say dogs look like their owners. They make their way to the bedroom, where Jonna's more excited to show off her scratchy new bedspread and sheets than she is to cuddle with Garrett. It's been 6.5 years since he's laid on a bed or been laid, so Jonna decides to take it to the shower. Garrett and his pasty ass climb in with her, and we hear Garrett say, "What is that, shower cap?" She wore a shower cap. So you're going to go through the trouble of going shopping for lingerie and shit, and then the first time you knock it out with this guy after almost 7 years, you're going to wear a grandma shower cap? Oh, now can you imagine this crew having to stand outside that cracked bathroom door and listen as these two go at it? Thank God it was extremely brief, because I don't think anyone was ready for this. Jonna was clearly disappointed. She wasn't ready for the 4 seconds that it lasted. But this is just the start of these two and their downward spiral. They're already finding things to bicker about, and it's only been a few days. Much like my third grader, Jonna wants Garrett to have a phone that they can FaceTime and send Bitmojis to each other. And she also wants to get him one of those phones, like for old people, where they only have three contacts in it, which on second thought doesn't sound like that bad of an idea for my mom. But anyways, in other words, she wants Garrett to have a speak and spell from 1982. Now, it's time for a girls' night and guys' night out. Jonna thinks she's Samantha from Sex and the City now because she's had sex. And somehow she thinks it's fur coat season, even though it doesn't make sense because Garrett is out on the same night and he is wearing short sleeves. Surprise to no one, Jonna turns out to be a stage 5 clinger, much like Shaunice on Married at First Sight. She practically has SEAL Team 6 on his ass, ready to grab him by his gelled hair and run. Token gay friend Christopher is inexplicably at girls' night, and I'm only saying this to point out the hypocrisy. Had Garrett had a girl with him, she would have hulked out. Well, Christopher thinks it's hilarious that she's tracking him like a legit stalker and says, "Don't even get me started, girl." Please, Christopher, please get started, because my gut is telling me Christopher is not as witty as he thinks. He's friends with Jonna, okay? Enough said. Well, Jonna says, "I don't even have to bug him to find out where he's at." It was like a horror movie, all four of them laughing hysterically at something that wasn't even a joke. It wasn't even funny. It was just a declarative sentence of what a tracking app is. It was like they all inhaled laughing gas injected into the bar by someone evil like Sophia from Teen Mom, if we're going to be honest. While the world's most boring girls' night out is wrapping up, Garrett is out with his friend Mark. Mark is a close talker with a very intensive eye contact issue, and it also appears that he has feelings for Garrett because he hinted at this on more than one occasion. He reminded Garrett that Garrett is TDH, tall, dark, and handsome. And slow down on that wedding. You're good looking, single, have fun. Garrett agrees, but Jonna puts on so much pressure. She be like, "My homegirl just got engaged, yo." Oh, okay. You got Marky Mark here, and now you fancy yourself the funky bunch. I don't think Jonna has ever used the phrase homegirl unless she was calling your daddy to remind him that she's a girl who is at home and needs another filter changed. While Garrett is drinking his very refreshing ginger ale at a bar, how long is that going to last? Jonna's back home and she's going full on Fatal Attraction. "Where are you? How's the guy's night? I know you read that." She cannot fathom why he would want to be out with friends after being in prison for 7 years instead of at home catching up on shows with her. When Garrett was in prison, she knew where he was, but now she doesn't have control of him, so she's freaking out. And she actually said, "He can go out all around town." Okay, Jonna, he was in one place. Slow down, Sparky. Now, in the midst of Jonna's exaggerated emotional rage, she's decided that she just can't fall asleep. She can't go to bed because she needs to know that he's safe if he's going to be out all hours of the night. And then we see it's 11:05 when Garrett comes in. Okay. Now this fight just explodes into Jonna saying that, oh yeah, he's allowed to go out with friends, but she wants to put this unspoken curfew on it. She doesn't want to be home alone without him anymore. And you know what? Because of all this, she just wants to sit down with herself and reevaluate because he has no business being out late and leaving the house a mess and she doesn't deserve this. And when are you going to propose? Because if you don't do it soon, maybe I don't want to get married. I mean, this girl has got some issues. So Jonna throws some insults at Garrett. Garrett throws some insults at her, calling her a bitch and psycho. The name calling was harsh. I will say that. I don't think there's any excuse for it. But also, Jonna, You can't play mind games either. She had it in her mind that when he was going to come home and he was just going to be a lovesick puppy for her 24/7, all lovey-dovey. And now since this fairy tale that she made up in her mind isn't reality, it's automatically his fault. And she's doing that thing where a girl or a guy will say, no, no, go out, have fun, go out with your friends. But what they really want you to do is they want you to want to choose them and stay home instead of going out. You know what I mean? So when they listen to you and take your permission to go out, you end up all butthurt about it. Like, they can't win either way. So the episode ends with Garrett storming out to go to the casino with whose money, I wonder. And next week, maybe we'll finally get to meet our new couple and see what happens with Lizzie's prison release. As always, thanks for joining me and listening. If you have a moment and enjoy the podcast, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Those make a big difference for us little guys. I'll be back next week with recaps of Sister Wives and Seeking Sister Wife, also Teen Mom, and of course, Married at First Sight. For bonus episodes, including the story of how I came into some stolen hot property in my teaching days, check out patreon.com/realityvpod. $5 a month for all the previous episodes and pretty much weekly bonus episodes at this point. And at RealityVPod everywhere else, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Enjoy your weekend, and as always, stay salty.